content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jen Rogers, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Catster.com and Dogster Magazine. We'll begin today's program with an article from Catster.com titled, Nine Ways to Find Affordable Vet Care for Your Cat, by Jackie Brown. Finding affordable vet care isn't impossible. We've compiled ways to find low-cost or free health care for your cats, as well as ways to save on vet bills. As the cost of veterinary care continues to skyrocket year after year, many pet owners struggle to find affordable vet care for their cats. With the incredible student loan debt, declining veterinary visits, and retailers taking more market share on basic preventative products, including pet food and even some pharmaceuticals, veterinary costs at best will likely maintain current levels, but are more likely to increase, says Darren Tall, a veterinarian, president-elect of the American Animal Hospital Association, and owner of two veterinary hospitals in central Kentucky. So what's a cat owner to do about finding affordable vet care? First, staying on top of your cat's health with routine care is the best way to ward off future health issues. Don't skip seeing the vet for years and years, even if your cat seems healthy. The most important part of preventative care is annual veterinary visits for pets less than 7 years of age and semi-annual veterinary visits for pets 7-plus years of age, Dr. Towle advises. So many things can be detected early and are much less costly than after a problem occurs. If paying for your cat's veterinary expenses feels impossible, here are nine ways to find affordable vet care, including free and low-cost routine and emergency vet care assistance. Number one, low-cost spay and neuter services. Spaying or neutering your cat is not only the best way to reduce the pet overpopulation problem, which in turn keeps cats and kittens out of shelters, but your cat will be healthier in the long run. It's expensive to care for unplanned litters of kittens, and the risk of certain health problems, including some types of cat cancers, can be greatly reduced or even avoided entirely simply by having your cat spayed or neutered. To find a free or low-cost spay or neuter program near you, contact local animal shelters, humane societies, and rescue groups. These organizations will have the most up-to-date information on the resources available in your community. Number two, TNR for feral cats. If you feed stray or feral cats in your yard or neighborhood, but can't afford to do much more than that, many community TNR, trap, neuter, release programs, are available to help provide health care for these cats. TNR programs are utilized mainly for feral cat colonies to control population while keeping cats in their own colonies, Dr. Tall says. In addition to spaying or neutering the cats, many programs also provide vaccines and even parasite prevention. These groups will either trap the cats for you or lend you traps and offer tips so that you can trap the cats yourself. To find a program in your area, contact an animal shelter, humane society, or cat-specific rescue group in your city or county. Number three, low-cost vaccine clinics. Vaccines are an important part of keeping your cat healthy and free from disease. If you can't afford the cost of routine vaccinations, contact your local shelter or humane society to ask about free or low-cost vaccine clinics in your community. Some pet supply stores also host low-cost vaccine clinics. Number four, pet savings account. Anticipated costs like food and vaccines are hard enough to budget for, but the costs that really hurt are bills for serious or emergency treatment. Start a savings account and deposit a certain amount into it every month for each pet you own. Then vow not to touch the money unless you need to pay one of your pet's vet bills. Number five, pet insurance. Pet insurance helps you plan for the unexpected. It is mainly for illnesses and injuries, not for preventative care like vaccines and dental cleanings. It's important to know that pet health insurance does not cover pre-existing problems, Dr. Tall explains. The best time to enroll in your pet health insurance is while your cat is young and healthy. If you wait, you can still get coverage, but it won't cover any previously diagnosed problems and is often more expensive. Number six, wellness plans. The opposite of pet insurance, wellness plans cover only preventative care, not illnesses and injuries. These types of plans might be offered directly from your veterinarian or added on to most pet insurance policies for an additional fee. Well, pet plans are nice and very similar to a pet savings account by most standards, Dr. Tall says. 7. Payment plans. If your cat needs veterinary care and you can't afford to pay a large sum up front, ask your veterinarian if they will allow you to pay your bill in smaller installments over time. Some clinics will set you up with a payment plan with no additional fees. Others require a small processing fee and/or interest. Some third-party companies like Scratch Pay offer payment plans that don't require a credit check. Essentially loans, such plans charge interest but allow you to pay over time. 8. Credit cards for vet expenses. If you're faced with a large vet bill and you've maxed out your credit cards, you might be able to get a special line of credit strictly for veterinary expenses. Third-party credit companies like Care Credit offer a variety of financing options for pet owners. Third-party veterinary credit cards certainly give a great purpose and fulfill the needs of pet owners who are not prepared for unexpected veterinary expenses, Dr. Tall explains. Many have low or no interest for a period of time, which is similar to a payment plan. This type of service can be a lifesaver, but people with no credit history or bad score might have difficulty being approved. 9, financial assistance programs. If you have exhausted all other resources and need urgent medical treatment for your cat, a number of organizations offer assistance programs for pets whose owners cannot afford the cost of veterinary care. If you adopted your cat from a shelter or rescue group, first inquire with them to ask about any programs they might offer to know about for veterinary care of a rescued cat. If you hit a dead end there, check out the following groups to see if you might be eligible for assistance. A. Brown Dog Foundation provides funding to families who find themselves with a sick pet that would likely respond to treatment, but due to unforeseen circumstances cannot afford the treatment. B. Cody's Club offers financial assistance to help offset a portion of the cost of radiation treatments for pets. C. Dogs on Deployment provides financial assistance to qualifying military members for help with pet care, dogs, and cats during times of need. D. Handicapped Pets Foundation provides wheelchairs and other equipment for dogs and cats with special needs. E. Kobe's Fund provides financial assistance to owners who cannot afford treatment for their cats with vaccine-associated sarcoma. F. The Pet Fund, financial assistance for pet owners who need help paying for veterinary care. G. Red Rover provides financial assistance, resources, and support to low-income individuals and survivors of domestic violence and their pets. H. Roses Fund offers financial assistance for veterinary bills for dogs and cats with a life-threatening illness, injury, or condition. And finally, I. Shakespeare Animal Fund offers financial assistance for emergency veterinary care for pet owners on fixed incomes or with annual incomes below current poverty guidelines. In addition to the above programs, Best Friends Animal Society maintains a listing of state-specific pet financial assistance programs on its website. Now we'll move on to another article from Catster.com titled, Why Do Cats Sleep So Much? 5 Facts About Sleeping Cats by Jane A. Kelly. Why do cats sleep so much? And are they truly sleeping or just resting? Do they dream? Is cat snoring normal? Read on for facts about sleeping cats. Why do cats sleep so much? Our feline friends are true masters of falling asleep anytime, any place, under any circumstances. Even a cursory web search will reveal thousands of photos of sleeping cats in cute or crazy positions. But why do cats sleep so much? And what happens in their minds when they're sleeping? Do they have sleep cycles like people do? Read on to find more about sleeping cats. 1. All that sleeping is in your cat's genes. When answering the question, why do cats sleep so much, let's first look at how long cats sleep. Cats can sleep as much as 16 hours a day, and older cats spend even more time at rest, as much as 20 hours a day. That sleeping habit is a result of the cat's evolution, nutritional habits, and physiology. In the wild, cats have to hunt in order to eat, and the stalking, chasing, and killing of prey burns a lot of energy. Sleeping helps cat conserve energy between meals. 2. Cats aren't always sound asleep. Of the time cats spend sleeping, about 3/4 of it is what we might call snoozing. In that state, Cats can get all the rest they need, but they're still alert enough to awaken at a moment's notice. You can tell when a cat is in light sleep because their ears will twitch and rotate towards noises, and their eyes will open a tiny bit. Even when they're sitting upright, cats can slip into that dozing mode. 3. Cats do, however, sleep deeply and even dream. The remaining quarter of cats' sleeping hours is spent in deep sleep, but older cats might spend as much as 30% or 40% of that time at that level. Cats in deep sleep are usually curled up with their eyes tightly closed. Sometimes they might even have their tail over their face like a fluffy sleep mask. Deep sleep is critical for the body's ability to regenerate itself and stay healthy. It's also the time when your cat dreams. If you've seen your cat's whiskers or paws twitching while she's sleeping, there's a good chance she's dreaming. 4. Some cats do snore when they sleep. Cat snoring happens when the airway is obstructed by extra skin from the soft palate. This is most likely to happen when your cat is relaxed, so it wouldn't be outrageous to notice your cat sawing some tiny little logs from time to time. Snoring is more likely to occur in short-nosed cat breeds such as the Persian, Himalayan, or exotic shorthair. 5. A change in your cat's sleeping habits could be a sign of trouble. If your cat starts sleeping a lot more or a lot less than usual, contact your veterinarian. Excessive sleep could be a sign of illness or pain, while frequent wakefulness can indicate a problem such as hyperthyroidism. We'll finish our articles from Catster.com with a timely article titled, "Will Daylight Saving Time Make My Cat Bonkers?" by Dr. Eric Barchas. Your mornings might be hard for a few days after you've spring forward, but is your cat affected by daylight savings time? I love daylight saving time. I love the extra relaxing hour of the evening that it provides. I love that it heralds the onset of spring. In my opinion, it's just about the best possible use for an hour. And let's face it, an hour isn't much. But daylight savings time, which started Sunday, March 11th this year, has its detractors. Just as alarmists feared the fluoridation of the water supply was a communist plot, a plot evidently for Americans to stop suffering from cavities, some people claim that daylight saving time harms health through disruption of circadian rhythms, or leads to excessive energy use, or simply represents a lost hour of sleep. Several governments, notably those in Saudi Arabia, North Korea, and Arizona, do not recognize daylight savings time. But for the sake of thoroughness, let's revisit those possible health issues. Specifically, because I'm a veterinarian, let's talk about the potential health issues your pet may suffer as a result of daylight saving time. Are cats affected by the one-hour time change during daylight saving time? My experience of the effect of one-hour time changes in pets is this. They are negligible. It's one thing to fly for your cat from Seattle to Mumbai or Hawaii to Japan. She will experience significant jet lag, not to mention culture shock. It's another thing to move the clock back or ahead by an hour. In my experience, most pets simply don't notice. And why would they? Let's start with the worst part of daylight saving time. You have to get up for work at the time that feels like an hour earlier for at least a week. Ostensibly, your cat might also have to get up earlier, although I'll bet many pets simply keep sleeping. I know my dog does. Regardless, I doubt your cat has to worry about getting to work on time. Waking up early isn't so bad if, rather than heading into the office, you get to lounge around all day like most cats do. If you regularly sleep 6 to 8 hours a night and then have to hightail it to work, that lost hour hurts. But what if you're a cat and you usually sleep 16 to 18 hours out of every 24? If you could go back to sleep for as long as you wanted after the alarm went off, perhaps after first eating breakfast, would you really notice if the alarm went off an hour earlier, never mind the scrambling and complaining your owner was doing? Cats and dogs are highly adaptable. Part of their job is to adjust to our schedules. Do you and your cat wake up precisely the same time every day? I certainly hope not. If you do, I hereby diagnose your pet's life as boring. I am precluded by law from diagnosing your life as boring, but you can draw your own conclusions. In that case, I recommend that you try to shake up things a bit. You and your cat will be happier for it. If you have to go into work early, Miss Tibbs adapts. If you get to sleep in on a Saturday, Fluffy sleeps in too. Cats and dogs can roll with these sort of changes, and for the vastly overwhelming majority of them, an hour here or there won't be a big deal. Remember that both species were domesticated before humans had invented the concept of time. Outside of the tropics, Photo periods, the lengths of each day, vary with the seasons. Human schedules differed with the length of each day, and our pets' schedules varied right along with each other, right along with ours. How does daylight savings time affect cat medications? That said, there is one veterinary-specific aspect of time change that should be addressed: medications. Many pet meds are prescribed to be given at intervals of 8, 12, or 24 hours. If your cat normally receives her thyroid medication at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m., what should you do when the time changes? Continue to administer it at last week's time, or adjust to the change and administer at 9 and 9 until standard time returns? In the overwhelming majority of cases, it doesn't matter, with rare exceptions, which generally involve medications that normally would be administered only in an ICU setting. Giving your kitty her medicine an hour early or late won't make any difference at all. There are, however, a couple of exceptions. The first is insulin, which is used to treat diabetes. If you give your cat her dose too early, it could lead to dangerous low blood sugar levels. The good news is that, even for insulin, the risks of changing the timing administration by an hour are very small. It probably won't matter. However, if your pet is diabetic, check with your vet about how this drug should be administered after the time change. Another exception is furosemide, also known as Lasix, which is used to treat heart failure. Again, for most pets, an hour's difference probably won't matter. But if you want to be safe, discuss it with your vet. If you're still worried about that daylight saving time is bad, I have two propositions. First, and most simply, why bother changing the clock at all? That would eliminate the time changes and the minor complications they cause. If year-round daylight saving time is unpalatable, then I have an idea that everyone surely would accept. Let's change the timing of this time change. Instead of boringly switching over at 2 a.m. on Sundays, wouldn't it be better to spring forward at 4 p.m. on Friday? It'd certainly make the weekend get here faster, and we could then fall back at 5 a.m. Monday. The new timing would lead to one better Friday and one better Monday every year, with no downside that any person would notice. Unlike the current time change regimen, it would have negligible effect on our pets. Now we'll move on to Dogster Magazine, to an article titled "Get Certified" by Nancy Hassel. Got drive, good temperament, and love a challenge? Then one of these certificates might be for you and your dog. Did you ever think that your dog has a greater calling than just hanging out on your couch and chewing on a bone? Maybe his or her personality is one with drive, or so patient, calm, and sweet that you can imagine your dog as a therapy dog? Today, there are many ways you can get your dog certified to help or be of comfort to the humans in our community and beyond. And some certifications are good to have for other reasons, like finding housing and homeowners insurance. Therapy dog. One of the most common certifications you may have heard of is therapy dog. Therapy dogs are dogs who went through testing to qualify to go into hospitals, schools, and nursing and retirement homes. According to PetPartners.org, those pets have a special aptitude for interacting with members of the public and enjoy doing so. Therapy animal owners volunteer their time to visit with their animal in the community. Therapy dogs should have friendly dispositions, love people, be patient, gentle, confident, and comfortable in many different environments. I spoke with Yvonne Dagger, who has worked with the Northeast Chapter of Canine Companions for Independence, CCI, which provides service dogs to help people with many different daily functions who need assistance. Yvonne and her husband raised Yaya and Dagger as puppy raisers, and then both were put into the advanced training program at CCI for additional training. However, not all dogs make it through the rigorous training to become a service animal. Yvonne adopted both incredible dogs, who now do therapy work on a regular basis. Both Yaya and Dagger are certified therapy dogs through Therapy Dogs International and provide therapy dog services on an average 3 times a month. It was a difficult test, Yvonne says. TDI has extremely high standards. If your dog didn't do what was required of him or her to do, you failed. One jump or one bark was an immediate failure. There was no room for errors. No treats were allowed. You were only allowed to correct your dog once. They had food lures and temptations all over the place. They tested for how well your dog did around wheelchairs, a person on crutches, and a person standing asking if your dog wanted a treat. It's a no-no for a dog to take anything from someone other than the dog's handler. Both Yaya and Dagger passed with flying colors, and they also both have their Canine Good Citizen, CGC, certification. Canine Good Citizen. The American Kennel Club, AKC, offers CGC testing, which is done by approved evaluators. A CGC certification is usually required before testing to become a therapy dog. Having your dog CGC certified, even if you don't ever plan on doing therapy work, is a great thing to do because it shows off your dog's good behavior. From the AKC website, the actual definition of CGC is responsible owners, well-mannered dogs. The AKC's Canine Good Citizen program is recognized as the gold standard for dog behavior. In CGC, dogs who pass the 10-step CGC test can earn a certificate and/or the official AKC CGC title. Dogs with the CGC title have the suffix CGC after their names. Having your dog tested and certified as a CGC dog is a great way to show how responsible you are. It could help you in a few ways, such as homeowner's insurance or getting housing if you're renting. It won't guarantee you insurance or that rental home or apartment, but it could potentially help. In other words, it's a great certification to have. Search and rescue. If your dog is one with drive from working dog lines, he could be a great working dog, and you may want to look into becoming a search and rescue SAR team. However, this certification is a big dedication of time and training for both the human and the dog. It's not to be taken lightly, but could be a fantastic way to help, especially after all the natural disasters we saw in 2017. Tanya Sarlanis, who has a rescue dog, Jagger, now in SAR training for the last 2 years, focusing on wilderness rescues, says, before getting into the specifics of search and rescue, it's important to remember that a handler, the human, must be committed to the training involved and understand the time commitment. Not every search and not every training will involve your dog. Most of the time, you'll have to do human training and dog training, as SAR canine is a specialty. It's like how you have to become a police officer first before you become a part of a canine team. This isn't a volunteer opportunity to be taken lightly, and there are many things to consider before starting. Tanya first had to do her training and was certified through the National Association for Search and Rescue, NASSER, to become an SAR Tech 2. Then she started training her canine, Jagger. There are different canine areas to focus on, such as live, find, area search, urban, trailing, and human remains detection, among others. There are many different SAR organizations and groups across the country to research if you are really interested in being an SAR team with your dog. Different areas and states will also use dogs differently when it comes to SAR. If you think your dog would be a great therapy dog, SAR dog, or you just want to get his CGC certification, contact your local dog training facility to see if it has any dog training classes on how to get started. Fake service dogs hurt us all. You may have heard news stories over the last year about people using fake service dogs to fly with, bring into restaurants, into stores, and using fake service dog vests. As of October 2017, there are 19 states cracking down and passing laws against fake service dogs, as well as these dogs are often not well behaved, act out, and cause problems for real service dogs and their owners who depend on them. Service dogs are trained to be under control, not bark or react when out in public with their owners. Most people hardly notice that they are there due to their years of training. Dogs are used for service for many different reasons. PTSD, canine assistance dogs, guide dogs for the blind, deaf or disabled, epilepsy or seizure detection dogs. And they are lifelines for their owners. Fake service dogs and their owners are doing a disservice to anyone who depends on their service dog and needs them to go about their daily lives. Next, we'll move on to the For the Love of Dogs, Why Do Dogs? By Melvin Pena. Why do dogs dig in their beds? Indoors, my dog Baby has a hard plastic bucket bed. Her bedding is made up of layers of quilts and rugs I find in thrift stores. When it's time for her to settle in for the night, she'll scratch at or dig into the covers, circle the bed several times, and then finally curl up to sleep. Outdoors, by the end of each summer, there are at least 2 spots in the yard that she's converted into little sleeping pits. No matter your dog's size, breed, or age, most seem to perform one or more of these strange bedtime rituals. A patchy lawn is one thing, but it can be a different matter when we discover holes in our furniture cushions or duvet covers. Let's take a look at why dogs do what they do. Why do dogs walk in circles before lying down? The size of baby's bed doesn't give her much of a turning radius, but I've watched her circle it countless times. Like a police helicopter hovering around a crime scene, my dog circles the same spot repeatedly, then lies down. She does it for a similar reason, to establish a secure perimeter. In the wild, dogs had to be certain their sleeping area was safe from pests and predators. Walking in circles creates enough commotion to startle any snakes or rats from their chosen sleeping area. While we know our homes aren't likely to play host to these sorts of guests, it doesn't cost a dog anything to double-check. Why do dogs scratch at their bedding? We can't see or sense it, but when dogs circle and scratch at their beds, they are actually staking a personal claim to that special place. One surprising feature of dogs' paw pads is the scent glands. When dogs get ready for bed, then their feet serve two purposes. Scratching and circling help our dogs chase away any unwanted pests and mark an area with their unique scent. If another dog tries to use it, the unique odor sends a message. This bed is already occupied by a dog who has just put the work to get it just right. Why do dogs dig in their beds? Home thermostats are set for our comfort rather than that of our dogs. If the heating or air conditioning bothers your dog, he relies on the same strategies as he does outside. By digging a bed in a shady spot during the summer, or one exposed to direct sunlight in winter, dogs use ground temperature to their advantage. They dig to cool down or warm up. Dogs also dig in their beds to make themselves more comfortable. It's the same impulse that leads us to twist, turn, and fluff our pillows before finding a position that feels good. Unfortunately, our pups don't know the difference between grass and home furnishings. Digging can change the ground or the chair or the couch to be softer, more inviting, and more restful. Is bedtime digging becoming a problem? Dogs circle, scratch, and dig in their beds to feel safe and easy before resting. If your dog's routine is ruining your garden or futon, don't get frustrated. Many dogs resist new bedding until they've had time to coat it in their own scent. Give your dog one of your old quilts to speed the process along. Don't have one ready to discard? Get one at a garage sale and use it for a few days. Next to their own scent, dogs are more likely to cuddle up and get peace of mind with yours. We've run out of time for today's episode of All About Pets. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.